week in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the July 16th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. World Cup football fans will be able to watch an unprecedented 4 matches a day on television during the group stage of the 2022 tournament in Qatar. Officials announced host Qatar will kick off the World Cup November 21st against an as-yet undetermined opponent at the 60,000-seat Al Bayt Stadium. The final will be played December 18th at the 80,000-seat Lusai Stadium. With 4 matches a day during the group stage, and with the relatively short travel distances for the venues in and around Doha, it could be possible for fans who travel to the 32-team World Cup to attend multiple games each day. The early matches are scheduled to kick off at 1 p.m. local time, with the 4th match of the day starting at 10 p.m. local time and finishing just before midnight. FIFA's chief tournaments and events officer, Colin Smith, says 4 matches a day throughout the group stage ensures optimal rest time for the teams.
So first and foremost, the match schedule is designed around sporting criteria. As football fans, we all want the best players in the world, the best teams in the world, to perform at the highest level. And one of the key factors to ensure that is the amount of rest that the players get between matches. So with this match schedule, 61 out of the 64 matches, the teams have equal rest. They have 3 days rest between matches, which is optimum for sporting performance. This round of 16, there's 2 matches where the teams will have 2 days rest, and then the third place playoff match, there's 1 team will have 2 days, and 1 will have 3 days, which is not uncommon for that particular match. So for the 28 days which we have for this World Cup, which is slightly shorter than previous World Cups, this would entail a 12-day group phase and a 16-day knockout phase, with 4 matches a day during the group phase.
The 2022 World Cup was switched from its usual June-July slot due to the heat in Qatar, and it's the first World Cup that will be held in the middle of the European club season. Colin Smith says there will be a celebratory atmosphere in the Gulf state.
The World Cup is always a festival of football, a real celebration for the fans who come on site and watch. And, you know, in Qatar, with the compact nature, this is going to be amplified even more, with 32 teams and 32 sets of supporters all in and around Doha, with Qatar fully embracing the experience of hosting the World Cup. The 4 matches a day during the group phase, the 2 matches during the round of 16 and the quarters, also provides much greater access and opportunities for fans to see not only their favourite teams, but also other best teams in the world, be that in the stadium or at the FIFA Fan Fest taking place in Doha.
Meanwhile, the Secretary General of the 2022 FIFA World Cup Organising Committee is Hassan Al-Thawadi. He talks about the historic nature of this World Cup.
This will be the first World Cup in the Arab world, in the Middle Eastern world. We've always said that we are aiming for it to be a bridge between different cultures. It'll be an opportunity for people from different backgrounds and different walks of life to not only experience great football, but create lasting relationships and lasting bonds and friendships. And especially considering that we're coming out of COVID-19, I think I genuinely believe it'll be the first global celebration where we will collectively have overcome COVID and we will collectively be able to celebrate this tournament and create a lasting bond. And that's why I think it's when I always thought it was previously significant, I believe the significance has become even more.
That's Hassan Al-Thawadi, the Secretary General of the 2022 FIFA World Cup Organizing Committee. And thanks to World Football's governing body, FIFA, for that audio. In more World Cup news, Ghana recently marked the 10-year anniversary of its painful elimination at the tournament in South Africa. The Black Stars of Ghana lost to Uruguay 4-2 on penalty kicks in a controversial quarterfinal in Johannesburg. Joining us now from Accra is Ya Afusu Larbi. Sporty greetings, Yao.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. A date that many Ghanaians are not particularly excited to hear because of the history attached to it. A day that evokes memories of pain, disappointment and regrets, and years after the events of that day in 2010, it still lingers in the minds of many. The 2010 FIFA World Cup was Ghana's tournament by far. The West African country beat Serbia and the United States en route to reaching the quarterfinals of the competition for the very first time and only the third African country to attain this feat. In the ensuing game against Uruguay at that stage of the competition, the Black Stars started well, Suleiman Tari scoring just on a stroke of halftime. The second half provided evidence of football being a game of two halves. The game came into its own though after Diego Forlan scored. But it was the final minutes of extra time that changed history. The infamous Luis Suarez handball on the line that denied Ghana a chance to score resulted in a penalty which Asamoah Gyan missed. Former Ghana defender John Paintel, who played in that game, says it is still a very difficult game to watch, even now that 10 years have passed.
You know, that's why I said I don't like watching it, you see. He took the ball confidently, okay? He put the ball down, he went back, came, found his spot, he hit it. Yeah. And the ball, like I said, that ball is very fast.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was a bit light. So if it was like a normal ball, like that power, he would have gone in.
Yeah.
But like I said, this is football. Football can humble you, football can make you big.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, at that time, everybody went shocked, but we started saying, hey, come on, there's more time.
Okay.
We could still push and then get them at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was thinking that at least what we did to U.S., that spirit will repeat itself.
Asamoah Gyan had been the outright African star of the tournament and typically the man who was vilified after that infamous penalty miss. He says he still has memories from that day.
Honestly, I haven't watched the game. I always go back and then watch the penalty. You know, that is the only thing I watch. People even tag me, you know, I have to just watch it and then just shake my head. You know, I wish we could go back again and then have that penalty. But life goes on. You know, there are a lot of great players who have missed a crucial penalty, like what I did, you know. But as I always say, life goes on. You know, honestly, I always watch it all over and all over again. And it's something that I will never forget.
2010 was a massive year for Ghana football. A year that meant so much for how football is seen in Ghana and on the continent. It paved way for new stars to be born, and in many ways, the peak of Asamoah Gyan's powers. He named that year as his biggest ever stage.
I always say 2010 year was my best year in my career, my whole career. Everything I did was working. Even I came to music, businesses was working, you know, I was having contracts, winning awards, you know, my whole life changed, you know. I became an icon. Everybody saw me in the whole world, you know. And even the tournaments, I was in the top three best players in the world at that time. You know, I was on top of the world, you know. I was living the life I could never forget.
There will not be many chances to get back to the sports the Black Stars reached in 2010. Like Cameroon in 1990 and like Senegal in 2002, the Ghana team of 2010 will always be remembered by one penalty miss and the man who orchestrated it, Asamoah Gyan. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Ya Afusu Larbi in Accra.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Turning to African athletics, Kenya's Rosemary Wanjiru has run to the fastest time by a woman this year, over 10,000 meters. Rosemary clocked just over 30 minutes and 38 seconds Wednesday at an international meet in Abashiri, Japan. Wanjiru's time is 3 seconds off her personal best, which she set last year when she finished fourth just off the medals podium at the World Championships in Doha. In the men's 10,000 meters race in Abashiri, Jonathan Ndiku led a Kenyan sweep of the top three places. Jonathan is a former Commonwealth Games champion and two-time world junior champion in the steeplechase. He had a winning time in Japan of 27 minutes and 23.47 seconds. Fellow Kenyans Alexander Matisu and Richard Yator placed second and third, respectively. Meanwhile, Kenya's world and Olympic steeplechase champion Conseslus Kipruto says he hopes he'll receive special dispensation in order to compete at the Monaco Diamond League meeting on August 14th. In an interview with China's Xinhua news agency, Kipruto says, and I quote, "I know the organizers of the race in Monaco and Athletics Kenya are in negotiation in regard to overcoming the travel challenge. We might be forced to take COVID-19 tests and be given certificates to confirm our status before traveling. At present, Kenyan citizens are not allowed to enter European Union territory, although travel restrictions could be lifted prior to the Monaco meet." Elsewhere, Kenya's marathon world record holder Bridget Koske says she's disappointed the 2020 Chicago Marathon was canceled because of the coronavirus. Koske set her world record at last year's Chicago Marathon with a time of 2 hours, 14 minutes, and 4 seconds. In an interview with Kenya's The Standard newspaper, Bridget says, and I quote, "It was largely an expected decision, but as a sports person, I always hoped for something positive. I have been training with the hope that I would return to Chicago." Koske says she's not sure of her next marathon, but one possibility is the London Marathon, which was originally scheduled for April 26th, but was postponed to October 4th.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
My Voice of America colleague, Jim Stevenson, tipped off his latest game room with the restart of the National Basketball Association at the end of July. Here's Jim.
I'm Jim Stevenson. Welcome to The Game Room. Practice is underway as National Basketball Association teams get ready for a shortened season they hope will happen in several weeks. Head coach Brett Brown has been assessing his Philadelphia 76ers players.
As the practice goes on, you can start to really feel and see an endurance type of deterioration or a maintenance of a standard.
Brown feels his team seems to be in good shape.
I felt like it was a pretty good judgment of are they in decent shape? Did they attain that B goal that I had put to them? And I can confidently say, I believe that they have.
Veteran 76er center Al Horford is happy to be back and trying to set an example for his teammates.
Yesterday was our first full day of being out of quarantine. That was nice. Yeah, that remains the big question. I do believe as professionals, we're here to do a job, and we need to hold up to that standard. My hope is that everyone does follow along. This is a big challenge, and I think individually as men, we all have to, make sure that we're doing our part.
The training camp phase in Orlando, Florida will continue through July 24th when the Sixers will play their first exhibition game against the Memphis Grizzlies. In addition to carrying the burden of staying safe from coronavirus, NBA players are also figuring out their role with social justice messaging. Los Angeles Lakers superstar LeBron James says he will not replace his name with a message on the back of his jersey. Teammate and seven-time NBA All-Star Anthony Davis agrees.
I was kind of torn between the two. Should I go with a social justice message or should I have my last name? And I just think my last name is something that is very important to me, and also social injustice as well. But just holding my family name and represent the name on the back to go through this process and a name and people who've been with me through my entire career to help me get to this point. We'll have a ton of ways to kind of represent, what we stand for.
Both James and Davis have been outspoken about social justice causes in the past, although the younger Davis has been less vocal than James. The Lakers open play in Orlando on July 30th against the Los Angeles Clippers. Social justice pressure has finally toppled a long-standing symbol of resistance for a National Football League team. Washington is putting its Redskins name and Indian head logo in the past.
The pressure has been there for many years, and the decision should have been made prior to now.
T. Bettina Cornwell is the academic director at the Lundquist College of Business's Warsaw Sports Marketing Center at the University of Oregon.
The pressure became insurmountable from the sponsors, and probably in particular FedEx as the stadium sponsor.
That financial pressure from big sponsors ended decades of criticism that the images were offensive to Native Americans.
There was support from the Washington Post years ago saying it wasn't offensive, but almost all of the serious research has shown that it is offensive. I don't think it takes very much consideration to see it as offensive.
The move is upsetting some longtime Skins fans who feel like changing the name changes the identity of one of the league's oldest franchises. And Cornwell admits it's not an easy logistical change for the team.
If I were to say the reasons for not doing it, it would be the expense of doing it in part, because rebranding is a very expensive undertaking. You have to reimagine the physical assets of the arena, your logo, your all of your digital assets as well. It'll cost a few million.
While mixed opinions remain about the name change, Professor Dr. Aneka Logan, who specializes in corporate communication, race, and diversity at Virginia Tech, says the difficulty of change can lead to a positive outcome.
Merely changing the name is not going to change the conditions of inequality and racism and the things that people have been protesting for so long. But I think that a name change can move beyond the symbolic into the actual material and creating actionable change, because in the first place, it will create conversation. Some of the conversation might be uncomfortable, but if we don't have conversation and talk about these issues, we cannot move forward.
Other teams like the Cleveland Indians, Atlanta Braves, and Kansas City Chiefs will be watching how the Redskins' name change plays out.
One of the things they have to first recognize is no matter what they change the name to, the mere fact that they're changing the name is going to elicit some backlash, and they need to be ready for that and comfortable with it. Beyond that, I think it's also important that they and similar organizations engage with your local community, engage with the Native American community, engage with all of your stakeholders in the process of the name change, and ensure that it's something that authentically aligns with your corporation's values.
Amid many social protests over the past several weeks, more than a dozen Native American leaders and organizations wrote to NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell last week, demanding an immediate end to Washington's use of the name.
History is history. The past is the past. We cannot change it, but what we can do is learn from it and figure out how to use it to create a more productive and a more inclusive and a more harmonious future for everybody.
Replacement names for Washington include Warriors, Warhogs, Wolves, and the Red Tails, which refers to the Tuskegee Airmen from World War II.
Absolutely vindicating.
Football across the pond has fans cheering for their team after winning a court battle. Dante Friend is a Manchester City fan.
This club's been dragged through the mire. The mud has been thrown at our club for years. The club said very much that we're innocent, that we can prove where the money's come from over the years. And that's, it should not have even got to this case. So heads must roll at UEFA as far as we're concerned. David Gill, Eve Letourneau, no credibility whatsoever. Should look at your own positions now.
The Court of Arbitration for Sport overturned UEFA's two-year European competitions ban on Manchester City for alleged breaches of financial fair play. Another fan, John Baker, had no doubt about his team.
To be honest with you, I always thought we was innocent. And why would the club do things underhand if they knew they could get done for it? You know, they've been dragged through all this for years. And to be honest, we were absolutely sick to the back teeth of it right now. I'm glad it's over. We can actually go forward now and do what we're supposed to be doing. Playing football in Europe, yes.
Baker echoes fan sentiment about what they feel is an unjust fine their team still has to pay.
What's come out of this today is, you know, £10 million fine, and that's just for not cooperating, not for being guilty or anything. Why should you cooperate with, in my opinion, a corrupt organisation? You just say, I'm not speaking to you. I'll see you in court. So that initially, that's why we've been fined £10 million.
But with the episode over and the team cleared, fans are ready to move forward and play for wins and titles.
The players we've got now said they weren't leaving anyway. Kevin De Bruyne has actually come out and said he's not going to leave, no matter what happens. So now it's time to build on what we had, and we'll build up more, and we'll go and win that league again by this next season.
Finds a massive win.
West Indies captain Jason Holder led his team past host England by 4 wickets in the first test of their 3-match series at Southampton.
To beat England in England is no easy feat. We were able to do it last time we were here in 2017, so we all know what the feeling feels like. But again, things have changed drastically since then, and they're a massive, massive unit in their backyard. So to start the series as well is very, very promising for us, and we feel very proud of the way we've performed.
Holder's side chased down a target of 200, thanks mainly to Jermaine Blackwood, who scored nearly half that amount with a strong 95, although it was fast bowler Shannon Gabriel who was named man of the match for his 9 wickets.
We strive to win every single test match we step on the field to play. Yes, in the past, we haven't started the series as well, and we've been always made to play catch-up. But it was just really important that we started this series well. I think England missing Root is obviously a big miss. You know, he's a high-quality player.
It's the first time in 13 years that the Windies have won the opening test of an overseas series, and it featured Holder against England's stand-in captain and fellow all-arounder Ben Stokes.
Yeah, it's cricket, man. I guess it's just ironic that when he comes to bat, I guess I'm on the ball, and you know, when I come to bat, he's on the ball. But again, he's a competitor, man. I expect nothing less from Stokes. You know, he's one of those guys who plays cricket with everything he's got. You know, he gives it his all, and I thoroughly respect him, you know. But for me, that gives me that adrenaline rush, and you know, you just want to dethrone him and not let him get it. And similarly, I guess when he comes to bat, he feels the same way.
The second test with England at Old Trafford in Manchester is underway Thursday.
Thanks, Jim. That's my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson. Jim has new stories each week in his game room, or you can play anytime via voanews.com. And And that wraps up the July 16th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC. VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues.
It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.